Content creators and influencers wrestle with the idea of monetizing their communities. In this conversation, Sipho Alfie Mkhwanazi, an MC, a media personality, and a well-loved content creator, shares how he builds his community and works with brands. Some of his achievements include working with brands like Fanta, Mercedes-Benz, Vodacom, and being part of the team behind the KFC wedding, which made waves in 2019. He also shares how you can build your community and what brands need to consider before working with influencers.
If you want to be a smart content curator, it then becomes important for you to position yourself accordingly, to know what it is you're selling, because life is all about sales. What it is you're selling so that you're able to monetize out of it.
Thank you for tuning in to The Lead Creative. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Monge Zimtati. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe. Alfie, thank you so much for making time to talk to us. Yeah, it's so exciting to finally get to have this conversation with you. I've been following your content online. I've been getting a lot of videos from TikTok, sometimes even from my mother, who loves your content. So it's like you appeal to audiences across the board. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Monges. It's so good to see you.
Awesome. So before you became a full-on content creator and MC, you were working at Sandparks. And we know the story, or at least we've heard the story of you working at Sandparks and being an MC. But how long were you at Sandparks before you left to become a content creator? That's the part that I'm kind of not clear on.
I think I was at Sandparks for 4 years. Yeah, it was about 4 years. I started at the South African National Parks in 2018, and I left in 2022. Yes, it was 4 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And then over that time, of course, you had built, you know, you built your profile, you had done a lot of work, you are a comms specialist yourself, and we'll talk about how that influences content creation. But how important is it to strike while the iron is hot? Do you think that if you didn't leave Sandparks, at the time that you did, if you left a bit later, that your content would have flown as much and that you would have become the content creator genius that you are today? Like, how important was that making that jump when you did?
I've always been a firm believer that when the time is right, things just fall into place. And sometimes the time does not appear right for you. Sometimes it may not necessarily appear right for others. But when the time is right, things just fall into place. And me taking the jump then was a matter of just realizing that my wings had reached the ceiling. And I was just starting to get uncomfortable with being enclosed within, you know, the structures and all of that sort of stuff. And I wanted to fly and explore other things. But I don't necessarily think that had I made the jump at any other point, things would be different. You know, I think things would fall into place. I don't discuss this much, but some people know that I was part of the hashtag KFC proposal, hashtag KFC wedding. We were actually part of the team that started that trend in 2019 already. And it was a huge sensation across the globe. And it was big. And that was what I was eyeing as that wind that would lift me and propel me into greater things. But I was like, not yet. So whether you, like, at any point should you decide to jump, because we always think there must be a right time, there must be signs, there must be this, there must be that, you know. We are always waiting for that one chance, that one opportunity that sometimes may never come. You just have to make that opportunity, decide to take the leap. And if you are in alignment, I kid you not, the universe responds swiftly and you are carried.
You mentioned the KFC wedding, which is an interesting thing that I'd almost forgotten about, because that's the nature of social media. Things fly and they become part of conversations. And with something like that, which is to me in a way similar to a reality TV show, right? The kinds of questions that we ask, is it staged? Is it real? Is it a campaign? Is it just a person proposing at a KFC? What goes on behind the scenes of something like that?
Oh, I think that was probably one of the most riveting and the most inspiring things I've ever worked on in my life. How it started was a gentleman decided to, this was an actual, it was a renewal of vows. They had been married for 7 years, or Mr. and Mrs. Nkasi. And when they met initially, they had met in a KFC. And that one was buying her order, that one was buying his order. And, you know, their paths crossed. And they took a liking to each other then. So he had now taken these rings to go get them cleaned. And he was coming back to where, you know, his first love was established. Yes. And he was now sort of recreating that moment. This is so romantic now that I think about it. Mm-hmm. He was recreating that moment with his wife 7 years later. But of course now, the age of social media and the age of instant content creation had now started taking off. So people took a snap of it. It landed its way to Facebook first before Twitter. And I mean, of course, Facebook is still such a huge, powerful social media platform across Africa. So even though we still call it the village, it's very, very still, you know, powerful. And the Facebook village had a, which is now Meta, they had their conversation about it. But when it landed on Twitter, that was when I bumped into it. So this is the Thursday. I think it was in May even. Yeah, May? I can't remember. Yeah, around there. And this gentleman is, Twitter critics were there, like, yo, why are South African men so cheap? how dare he decide to propose at a KFC? You know, couldn't he just, you know? So that's when I caught onto the conversation, and I said to people, can somebody find me his contact details?
Sure.
Why was I asking this? I am an MC through and through. No. I've always wanted to MC. And in some instances, I will make opportunities for myself to MC. When I see an opportunity to MC something, I'm like, I'm going for that. So the reason I decided to get his contact details, because I thought in my head, if this guy is proposing, there's a wedding coming up soon. There must be a wedding coming up soon. I want to be part of that. I want to be part of that. And for me, it was for me. I wasn't trying to get anyone else involved. I just wanted to speak to him to be like, hey, dude, you're getting married. I'm a wedding MC, you know, take me on.
Yes.
I got his contact details and I called him in the morning, and I'm getting ready to go to work at this point. And I said to him, hey, unjani baba. I was like, yeah, people have been talking about this for a really long time. Our phones keep ringing, whatnot. Yeah. Like, so you guys getting married? And he's like, we've been married for 7 years.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, so you guys are planning an anniversary, right? And he said, yes. I'm like, okay. Do you guys have an MC? And he said, no. Okay, sharp. Was it? But we don't have budget to have a whole wedding. We really don't have money. Yes. That's why we did it at KFC. We just wanted to celebrate and move out of the way. I'm like, okay, do you give me permission to go back to Twitter and say, let's create a wedding? Because You need four things. After all the years of emceeing that I've done in weddings, you need four things. You need a dress, a suit, a venue, and a cake. That's a wedding. That's a complete wedding. You need nothing else. That's a complete wedding. And he said yes. I went back to Twitter and I said, guys, I've just spoken to this gentleman. He actually, this is an anniversary. He actually wants to do a whole wedding. And let's just make this wedding happen. And at the time, I was very close friends with a friend of mine who's now late, Dr. Cindy Van Sale. And I spoke about her. Yes, I spoke about her yesterday. And I'm speaking about her again. I miss her so much. Dr. Cindy Van Sale was one of the biggest social media accounts on Twitter at the time and the most influential. Right. She was a social media shock, especially on Twitter. She had a huge following and a big market, and people loved her and they were easily influenced by her because she was just so authentic, so genuine, and she was just so real, you know. I put out that tweet there, and a friend of mine called Joe Human, he is doing incredible work with Jameson at the moment. Joe Human has got a brilliant mind. So at the time, their engagement on Twitter was insane. I was still a baby on Twitter. Yeah. I then said, okay, I'm putting this tweet out. Cindy, retweet. Joe, retweet. They both retweeted. Joe said to me, come collect me. Let's go see the couple together. Because at that moment, I decided, actually, let me just go chat to him. Let me just go speak to him and hear what he has to say. We need to make this wedding a success. So there I am. They lived in the Val, CDB. Yeah. Collect Joe, and we're driving. While we're driving, Joe is now looking at the tweet that we had retweeted. And it's a mess. I'm surprised. Why is my phone crashing? My phone crashed probably like six times that day. My notifications were insane. People are trying to contact us. People are now donating. It's now a huge thing. So yesterday was trending as the wedding proposal. It's now the KFC wedding. So we are now at the front end of this. People are donating. Brands are I've never seen such a unity of brands all at the same time with no agenda. With no hopes of gaining anything. South Africa was just so inspired at the time, and everyone wanted to participate in that. And that was incredible to see. I can't remember your question.
I like this. No, I think the question was what goes on behind the scenes, and you've described what goes on behind the scenes at, you know, in great detail, which is great. And from what I'm getting, the proposal happened by itself, you know, as an isolated incident that happened, and it was noticed by people on social media, started on Facebook, and then you saw this as an opportunity to create not just content, but to propel yourself as an MC at this particular wedding. And then you started you started to organically create this campaign for you to MC, but this thing became an actual campaign with brands now hopping onto it.
Yeah.
And I think in that, from sort of with that in mind, what I'm getting a sense of is that at the time you weren't partnering with brands. At the time you weren't working a lot with brands as a content creator, and that was your springboard, or at least that was part of the springboard to you working with brands. Now you do this thing, this campaign happens, becomes a big deal on social media and in the news and everywhere else. How does this change your life as a content creator? Like, how does this change the game for you?
So at the time, I had not considered myself as a content creator. And I think the term content creator is very recent. You know, it's a now thing. It's a buzzword now. But then there wasn't a term for it, content creator. Sure. There wasn't. You were either a Twelib. They used to call us Twelibs. or you were an Instagram baddie. They used to call them Instagram baddies and whatnot, you know. So there wasn't the term content creator. But, excuse me, at the time, I knew that I was an MC.
Sure.
And that was what is important. And that was what was important for me to be known as. Say that at the end of the day, this guy is an MC. And for me, that was an opportunity. And once it sort of lifted itself onto a global scale, that was really crazy for me because I was like, okay, yeah, this is an opportunity. This is, you know, I was listening to something that was recorded of Bonang recently. She said, this is my Super Bowl. You know, that was supposed to be my Super Bowl where I really show off my skills as an MC. But yeah, then the MCing gigs really started happening. But at the time, I'm still at the South African National Park. So it was a matter of having to just juggle the two until I realized, oh man, I need to go.
How long after the first instance that you realized that you were becoming a content creator, that, you know, that your name was starting to become, you're becoming a significant player in the social, sort of social media and social scene. How long between that time that you started realizing that and the time that you resigned from Sandparks to chase it full on? How long did that take?
It took quite a while because even after I had left Sandparks, it still had not dawned onto me that I was a relevant player within the space. I think I only realized that I was a relevant player in the space when I got my first big break to do live television. And this was for the Summer Awards, the Summers for TikTok had summoned me and they wanted to do a collaboration with the Summers, and it was the TikTok black carpet, and that would be live, and I'd be crossing live on air and actually, you know, on set. And only then did it dawn on to me, and this is maybe 6 months after I've left Sandparks. What? We have to do this. But what I really enjoyed about what I did was because I come from a PR background, and PR also comes with so much writing. We're storytellers. I spent a lot of time publishing and releasing articles of things that I would see, things that were interesting to me, taking people through what it means to create videos, what it means to work with brands, because I've always been interested in the science behind it. I think content creation is such a huge global economy, and a lot of people are not seeing it as such yet because so many individuals are really enjoying just, you know, the brand collaborations and attending the events, but we're not really sharing the proper knowledge and the really hard-hitting facts about how much exposure, how much money, and how much, you know, relevance one can generate for themselves if they really take it as a serious craft, and not just a craft, but also a business.
Now, on that, it hits both ways, right? Where a lot of, where some people take it really seriously, do the work, and they make it. Some people take it seriously as well, do the work, but they just don't get that springboard, or just don't shine or become the big names that that their counterparts become. What makes that difference?
I want to say authenticity. I want to say I want to say just, you know, you being yourself, you being unique. But it that doesn't make sense because, I mean, everyone, I would like to assume that when anyone goes onto social media and wants to make it big, they know that. But unfortunately, George Orwell once wrote a book that we learned about in high school, and it's called Animal Farm. And one thing I always remember of that is that some animals, all animals are equal. But yeah. Some just happen to be more equal than others. And, and sometimes it's just not your time or your platform, or it's just not for you at that moment. Doesn't mean to say that it will it won't blossom into something huge later or in a different way. I mean, 2019 was not my year, definitely. Had I left Sandparks then, I don't know. I don't think what we have and what we see now would have been, you know, what it is. But in 2022, when I decided, actually, was it 2021 when I left? 2022. When I left then, it was like, okay, sharp, now it's the right time. Let's go.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. I want to double back to this, what you've just mentioned about creating content and how serious it is and how seriously you take it. The world makes it look easy. And I'm one of those people who, you know, who make it sound as though it's easy, because we work within this space. We help other brands or other people create content and it looks easy, right? Just take your phone, film yourself. And it, as I would see in some of your content, for instance, it looks like you're just in bed taking out your phone and you've just had this thought and you're filming yourself and it really flies and it's funny and people download it, share it on WhatsApp and all of this. What does it really take?
There's a lot of adjustment that goes into content creation, because, and a lot of us content creators are not sort of conditioned for it as and when it happens. Literally, we play catch up quite a lot, because it starts off as you being on your bed recording a video and you're just sharing to your little 30 people, your circle of 30 people, and you're putting it on WhatsApp, you know, or you have a TikTok account and it's not a TikTok account that anyone knows about, you know. The algorithm just happens to favor you on that one day. Sure. And what you happen to say is something that people sort of take a liking to. So, and the TikTok algorithm, if you've learned about it, it's a crazy one. So it will show your video to 10 people. If 10 people watch more than 10 seconds of that video, it will show that video to 100 people. If 100 people, then it goes to 1,000. From 1,000, we're in the tens of thousands, the hundreds. And if hundreds of thousands of people are enjoying that content, that's now when you start reaching the millions. So, And all of this happens really quickly. I mean, the algorithm is quite a bully. It will literally push every other video out of the way.
Yes.
So that yours just keeps going. So every time somebody keeps scrolling, they will see. And the longer they last, what the algorithm has done now, if they watch a video of one video of yours for a while, the next two videos is another video of you, because the algorithm says, you seem to enjoy this.
You enjoy this content. You like this content creator and their style and their authenticity, as you put it.
Exactly, because it wants to keep you on the app longer. So you're now the sensation that everyone is talking about. Your videos are going all over and all of that sort of stuff. If you want to be a smart content curator, it then becomes important for you to position yourself accordingly. To know what it is you're selling, because life is all about sales. What it is you're selling so that you're able to monetize out of it. Mine is MC. I push the content, but the big agenda is have me at your event. I want to MC your event. So I think that's then where some content creators become, you know, a longer success. Or where some content creators do not stay long in the game, because as we speak, there is another Alfie who is budding. There's a content creator that mushrooms every single day. But once you've formulated your tribe, you need to have that one selling aspect that you sell to them, and that you're able to then push all the other narratives that you have. And that's the unfortunate part. As content creators, we're not programmed to think like that, because you were just recording just yesterday. You were doing this, and now you're being asked by Fanta, hey, how much does a video cost? I don't know how much a video costs. I've never had to charge.
Sure.
You know, people charge for videos. Sure. That's really what happens.
Yeah. There's a lot in this that I'd like us to unpack. The first part of this that I'd like us to unpack is what you're going out there to kind of sell, right? You said it's for you, it's emceeing, it's having people at your events. That said, whenever I see your content, whenever I share your content, I just find it really humorous, and I find it captures the story of us. And I want to say as South Africans, but it's not just South Africans. It's the story of us as the world. I mean, put you in another part of the world capturing a certain kind of similar kind of content, put you in New York or London, it would be similar because it's a human story that resonates, that's relevant, right? So there's that. So as the audience, putting myself on the side of the audience, I don't see you selling me emceeing. I see you selling me a story that I identify with, a story that resonates with me. And you've spoken about understanding your audience in another podcast as well. How then do you convert this humor, this human story that I experience, to the emceeing work on the one hand, and on the other, how do you know what content will fly based on other content that you've created in the past?
So I can say that I have sort of studied my audience and I know what they sort of like, but I'm yet to figure out that secret ingredient that makes a video fly. When I record a video, I don't record a video in the hopes for it to trend. I record a video because I'm sharing a thought. And if you relate to it, you relate to it. If you don't, you don't. You know, I just had my two cents and I put it out there, you know, because that's what I feel like doing. So my content isn't driven by numbers, but there is a language that my audience understands. There is a way of phrasing and the way I do things, the way I say things, that we've established that level of intimacy with my audience. Mm-hmm. So understanding what makes them chuckle and what makes them laugh is able to say, in as much as you guys are seeing the jester, the comic, the humor, here is the seriousness of Brand Alfie. And actually, this is my value proposition. This is what I actually do. And once you've created and established that relationship, you then establish that trust, because quite a lot, it's very, very unlikely for people to trust somebody who's overly hilarious. If you're very funny, it's like, yeah, he's great, but you don't want him for that serious thing. Hey, I'm not sure. Hey, you know, so you are still able to be serious, but also weave in the fact that, remember, you are speaking to a familiar here. We have a relationship. Sure. We know each other. And we've established that trust. So if you're able to trust me with the content, because if you trust me enough to send my video to somebody else, you trust that it's going to make them laugh. And if you can trust my video with somebody else, then you can trust me with your audience for your event. Let's do it.
Right.
You know.
No, that makes sense. You also spoke about monetization, and this is an area that a lot of people struggle with, and also an area that is difficult to have conversations about with brands as a content creator. And in terms of monetization, I'd like to get your thoughts on, one, monetizing on platform, like monetizing on a TikTok or Instagram or whatever, versus monetizing through brand collaborations and partnerships. What works? How do you build both? Because eventually you end up getting both, right? Because if you build your followers, you're able to monetize on platform. If you build your followers as well, you're able to also partner with a brand or with brands? How do you build these, or how did you build these?
So I have not necessarily started monetizing off of the platforms itself. There's a new trend now on TikTok where people are doing AI impersonations and whatnot, and apparently people are making so much money from that. And now I think TikTok allows you to sort of open like a channel, almost like a subscription-based sort of service where people sort of pay a subscription in order to, you know, access pieces of your content. I think my content is very, it has nostalgia. There's also just, it's its own specific way, whereas I do not necessarily want people to pay to see aspects of themselves that remind them of themselves through me. So I have not started monetizing off the platform yet. But also, when you start monetizing through brands, you then are put in a tricky situation where you now have to establish your value and figure out what your value is. And what that is then, what that means in terms of a rand value, or the specific currency. So there are things. So you start off, I mean, a lot of us start off not knowing what to charge. You know, I think my first video was like 500 rand or something, you know, and because you wanted to sort of start off. And once you charge that, you also get comments and responses from clients that say, oh, that, yo, you came in really under budget, hey, yo, considering the amount of work that you do. So you pay attention to those sort of things, like, yes. Okay. And as you go, you gradually increase in value. But as you increase in value, you also increase in skill. Also, because now you sort of know the algorithm, you now know when to post, what time to post, what to post, which sort of content, when you're pushing the envelope and when you shouldn't, you know. So you get to understand all of those things. And while you're learning and studying your target audience, when you then come with this huge figure that a brand is supposed to part with, you're able to give them proper receipts and say, pay attention to this content, it was posted at this time. Pay attention to this, pay attention to that. This is why I'm the right fit for this brand. And this is why I know you guys are going to get value from this video or from this piece of content. And the proof is in the pudding. So brands are able to track that because there are metrics behind all of these things. A brand is able to say, oh, actually, what he says he'll do, he delivers on.
Now, for a content creator who's starting out, who's building their audience, who's building their community, I mean, you've just said that with all the work that you've done and all the content that you've put out there, you haven't monetized on platform as yet, right? And that makes sense. So for a content creator who's looking to build, to grow their audience, what is the value of having 10,000 versus 100,000 followers? If you've built so much and such a following and such a big community, and you haven't yet monetized on the platform. I know that with you, of course, it's to sell your MC work. So you're also building that familiarity. Like, I'm a face, sure. you know. Sure. So for you, it makes sense in that way. But what would you say is the value of going from 10,000 to 100,000 to a million when monetization on platform itself isn't as easy or as possible?
So I think that then begs to call on the creativity of the content creator itself. Mm-hmm. You then need to be smart about... I realized, for example, that my content is content I can't make people subscribe to buy. I realized that very early on. Like, I'm not... Sure. And that's why you don't see me so much on YouTube, because I don't have long-ended content that I can sell, because YouTube is probably one of the best social media platforms for that sort of content. So sure. I realized that if I'm not going to be making money off of the platform, I need to find other vehicles that are going to make me the money. And that's why I do a lot of brand work. But more than anything, in everywhere that you bump into me, you hear me shouting the MCing loudspeaker, because I understand that the money that I'm foregoing from making on platform, I'm already making that stream of income through the MCing work that I do. And that is standing alone from the content creation aspect that I do. What has even been so amazing is the fact that production companies are now seeing, oh, actually, he can host a TV show. He can be on radio. He can do this. So it now opens other doors and other avenues within that space. I mean, I've had two TV shows since I've started my content creation journey, which is bizarre and unheard of. No production company would have hired me had they not seen that. So they are able to take that and harness that. And that then also becomes another vehicle of money generation on its own. So just from you building your audience and understanding the sort of content that you give, you are now able to establish various legs or streams in that one engine and that one vehicle that is your type and of content and the audience that you give it to.
I love a lot of what you said there. There's something that makes someone like you hugely different from somebody who is on TV or a media personality whom we've known to be on TV or radio, right? Is that you started it elsewhere and then you came onto traditional, call it broadcast or print media platform. So you started on digital and then you became and then you became a media personality on TV rather than many people who are big names who started on traditional platforms and then by extension built their following online. How does that change the kind of briefs that you would get when we are used to you a certain way? So just to give a bit of context there. So if there's a certain
I know exactly what you're asking.
I'm so glad.
I love your mind. So I remember, and I got caught out for this so badly, because this was the first advert. I'd actually been doing an advert with a brand, and they had asked me to come on, and they asked me for my figures, and I asked around my industry partners, and I said, how much do you charge for an advert? And I didn't realize there's a lot of budget that goes into advertising, you know, especially advertising on TV. So, okay, we're on set, I'm mic'd up, we're shooting and all of that sort of stuff, and they gave me the brief, and we want you to be Alfie and we want you to do this and all of that sort of stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure. And this who you're speaking to now, this is Alfie, you know. Alfie, there's the social media character, you know. And sometimes, quite often, I'm the social media character for that 1 minute when I record that video and I let go of it. And then I become this, you know. So they're like, ah, no, do it the Alfie way. I'm like, hey, this is the Alfie way. Like, oh, like, you know, we're expecting you to, like, use your, like, really, really quirky voice and all of that sort of stuff. And I remember saying this while I was trying to learn my lines. I was like, I don't know why people keep asking for this Alfie character, because this is who I am. So I'm one of those people who think out loud. I think out loud. The director came to me and he said, oh man, we're so sorry. We didn't realize that, you know, you had a problem with this. We just thought, you know, that we liked that and we thought you'd give us that, you know? I'm like, oh, are you guys going to be mad if I don't give you guys that? And they were like, no, you can do it whatever way you want. Just make sure that you're comfortable. And I was like, I am doing this in this way because I need people to understand the different dimensions and the fragments to brand Alfie. Sure. People need to be able to see, because the sad thing about South African content consumers is that they'll box you up into this little box, and that's where you stay. But one of the best ways to show off who you are and the abilities that you possess as a creative and as a content creator is being able to show different hues of yourself and different sides of yourself, to say, I can actually be serious if I need to be serious. I can be quirky if I need to be quirky. I can blend the two if I need to blend the two. But there are other elements that you guys have not discovered that are still just as good as the other one. So, and that advert did so well that client came back to us and said, we would like you to quote us on rerunning that advert.
Yes.
So that digital campaign resurfaced once again. So it's clearly been doing well. So go back to the question, Sipo.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. I think it's the fact that you are multifaceted. You don't create in a single way. You create in many styles, but also you collaborate with brands, and building your profile as you did helped you in becoming the kind of person that we see as a media personality as well. A little bit about just, you mentioned the algorithms, you mentioned how the algorithms work, you mentioned that you are not as active on YouTube as you are on other platforms. Do you have a platform of choice? I mentioned TikTok as a platform that I follow you a lot on. I see you are also active on Instagram. You mentioned that the big KFC campaign took off on Twitter, for instance, as opposed to all these other platforms. Do you have a platform of choice, and why that platform?
I would like to say Instagram is my platform of choice, simply because, one, it's the platform that sort of makes quite a chunk of the revenue when it comes to the content creation. That's the first aspect. Number two, it's more predictable than the other apps. The Instagram algorithm is still somewhat more predictable. There are special ingredients that you throw into a post if you want it to give you the numbers that you wanted to give you. So I still have sort of sway in how a video is going to be perceived and received, and how big it's going to grow. But also number three is that Instagram is so much more intimate. There is a tribe. My Instagram tribe is like, those are my people. They can pick up when I haven't posted, and they send DMs. You haven't said anything today, but are you okay? You know, they know my patterns. They know when I say stuff. They can even read through me when I'm trying to sort of toughen up on a day and it's a bad day. They can see through that and be like, "Champ, you're not okay." However, all of this would not have been happening had it not been for TikTok. Well, TikTok brought the rise, because that conversation and all of that mileage and momentum that was generated from TikTok carried over to Instagram. Because once my TikTok community had grown to a specific amount, I literally put out a video and I said, "Guys, I have an Instagram account that like everyone is neglecting, and like, let's just go visit that." And that entire TikTok tribe then went onto Instagram, and now those are the two sort of tribes that I manage. So Instagram definitely, and TikTok.
Why not Twitter? Because, like you said, you did the KFC campaign really took off on Twitter. Why not Twitter anymore?
I think as the social media platform grows, there are certain personalities that also sort of develop on different platforms, you know. Mm-hmm. And anyone who works with brands will tell you the sort of slight dangers that come with working on TikTok, on Twitter. I think Twitter people are more liberated in their comments, and there is a less of a personal sort of engagement on Twitter. You're just sharing your opinion and it doesn't matter. On Instagram and on TikTok, we see your face. We actually see your video. We actually see the human. It's not just characters that we're reading. We see the human. So when we critique your work, when we're speaking to you and about you, there's more tact on those platforms than there is on Twitter. So because of the diciness of Twitter, I'm just like, oh, I'm not sure if that's where I sort of wanted things to take off. But also, people interpret characters differently than they do when you actually speak, you know. So people could not really pick up on my humor on Twitter. Mm. It was only when it was on Instagram and on TikTok where people were like,
yeah,
oh, actually, this champ is interesting somewhat.
This episode is sponsored by the digitally led customer experience agency, Roger Wilco. For all your customer experience, digital marketing, and web development needs, go to rogerwilco.co.za or rogerwilco.co.uk. You can also download the South African CX report and the Township CX report directly from their website, free of charge. Don't we all love something free every now and again, especially with insights, right? Now back to the show. You keep talking about your tribe, which I really like because I mean, there's a marketing author who's one of my favorite authors who speaks about this idea of tribes. And in your sense, your tribe is obviously the audience and the people that you talk to and the people that you have in mind when you create your content, which is really great because then it means you take your, you know, you take your audience. I think you keep your audience in mind. How would you describe this tribe of yours? Because again, you spoke about understanding your audience, which you do, and you keep talking about your tribe. How would you describe, who your tribe is? I know that it's not necessarily in South Africa. Like I said, it's everywhere. Anyone with whom the content resonates, how would you describe them?
I think, yeah, this is a tricky one. And this is one of the assignments that we're working on for our 2024 strategy for the brand. So I've been tasked with having to describe this audience, having to describe this tribe. I think that this tribe is predominantly female. I can tell you that. Probably 80%, 70% they are female. They have some form of nostalgia. Something about me reminds them of home. I think that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why my content does so well. It just reminds a lot of us of home. Three, they are quite a transparent and really easygoing group of individuals that understand that life comes at you quickly and life picks up just as it does. Because some of the things that I speak about are things that we relate to so much where you're like, that happened to me yesterday or this morning. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not bringing something foreign to me. You're not talking about how it is being in your dad's mansion and, you know, your Porsche was stuck on the side of the road. You are giving me real life struggles. This is what I'm experiencing. This is what I go through on a daily basis. I just didn't have the words to articulate it, and you've just put it to me in 30 seconds or in a minute. So I think my tribe, and I've got a very sort of strong tribe in terms of conversion. When I say to my tribe, guys, we're going and we're going to march, my tribe is very responsive because we understand each other. That communication is so intimate that when my tribe even asks for something or a piece of content, sometimes I get DMs hey, did you see this? Why haven't you said anything about this? You know, and I have to then be smart and say, okay, sharp, I'll chime in on that, or that's not my conversation to have. So yeah, I've got quite an interesting tribe.
There is, there's a lot to your tribe, and there's a lot to your content as well. There's something that I'm realizing on your timeline, or at least when I just look at your content, that there's, of course, there's the basic content that you kind of create, and then there's the branded content that you have. How do you approach the content creation and recording and filming and editing process differently when you do your day-to-day content versus when you do content for brands? And I'm thinking right now of the content you did with Fanta in recent times.
So it all depends on the brief and the sort of character that you're trying to put across when it comes to the brand specifically. There are some brands that will need you to go technical, where I need a videographer to come shoot this. I need a cameraman or a photographer to actually record that content for me. There are some pieces of content that I've still been able, like really crazy branded pieces of content that I've still been able to record in my tab or even in my bed, you know, and it still does the numbers, and clients is just like, oh my word. Excuse me, how did you think of this, you know, just from your bed? It really depends on the nature of the brief. If you understand your brief properly and you sort of see what that brand is doing, I mean, you can't talk about Fanta laying in your bed. I can, yes, I can. But Fanta is an energy brand. It's live. It's vibrant. It makes you want to be out there. Right now, the biggest key message is snacking is still relevant and all of that sort of stuff, you know. So based on what the brand is trying to put across, you also want to meet the brand at the same level. That's when you really want to do that. But sometimes you want to change the narrative by going against the tide. And I'm known to do that quite a lot, where a brand will be a lively brand and I'll come in so subliminally. And because that is unexpected, that on its own becomes the buzz, that becomes the discussion points, and that becomes the, we would never have thought. I did a video recently with a gentleman called Primo 19, probably one of the best content creators I know. He's remarkable. Primo is known to take other videos and create skits of his own without using his voice. At no point. No, there are very few people who know what Primo's voice sounds like. But I grabbed Primo the other day and we did a skit together. I think that skit is still trending. Where people were hearing Primo's voice and they're like, it's Primo, you know, and you've got my alter ego, the Umam Smosh. It completely goes against the tide of what Primo is known to do. And now slap bang and mash it with Umam Smosh, who we know that's her arena. That's what she does. Yeah. And now that mix up, it just took off. So it's just a matter of understanding the sort of brand that you're working with, the messaging you're trying to relay, and how you want this content to be received. Once you understand that, then you know, this one I can't. This is not a selfie I can just take and post. I need to actually get a photographer to take a picture of this outfit, or a videographer to create all of these, you know. And I always say I'm such a fraud, because the editing, I never know how to do. I will just get the content out there, throw it to the team, and they will do whatever it is that they do, and we'll put it out there, and hopefully you guys enjoy it.
There's a There's a lot of information that's being shared by very many people around content creation, especially, I mean, if you go onto TikTok, especially, that's where I see it a lot, where people are like, yeah, post 2 times a day, post 3 times a day, post X number of times a week, all of these things. The algorithm likes this and does that. Do you follow that schedule?
You will be so tired. Yeah. And there are people who do that. There are people who do that. Like, Primo, for example. Primo is about to approach 1 million followers because of how religiously you bump into his content. He's very... I think he records his content in bulk even, and he times it because he's... You know to expect a video from Primo. I, on the other hand, I am so lazy. There are days I even forget that I have a TikTok account and was like, oh, oops. Hey, guys, I'm back. You know, I didn't you know, die under a bus or anything like that. But I think these cheat codes that are given out regarding the algorithm and how to grow your account and all of that sort of stuff, they really do work because people sit down, and that's where the science behind the content creation comes in. But for a person like me who really is just like, you know, enjoying it, and so much of a fly-by-night, you know, if I do say so myself, I'm having fun with it. So for me, there's less pressure to sort of,
be religious that way. And in terms of preference, maybe not preference, but where have you seen more success? And do you prefer working with the brand directly or working through an agency? Of course, there are advantages and disadvantages on both ends. What's your preference? What makes it easier for you?
I think I enjoy working with agencies quite a lot because I have an agency background as well. So I understand what agency tries to do in terms of relaying that message, because quite a lot of times, brands struggle to communicate their own voice. They need assistance in some instances where they are told, this is actually what you guys stand for. This is the sort of brand that you are. Some brands don't see that, you know. So agencies are able to translate those stories and translate, you know, that messaging. But for me, it's always been so much easier working with the brand, because sometimes the brand does not necessarily give all of its assets to the agency. So when you are coming through, you're coming through to work on one project. I have a communications, branding, and marketing background. So I understand the 360 approach to that one video we're seeing on TikTok is not just that one video. There are other key points, and we call them touch points in the brand value chain, where you get exposed to the brand. So if we're doing this campaign on Alfie wearing these glasses, is there a release that we've put out in terms of a presser to say, okay, this frame of glasses does this and all of that sort of stuff. And when we are selling this and distributing it in the shops, where are we strategically placed? Outdoor advertising, what does that look like? There must be a whole golden chain that we go through where somebody bumps into Alfie's video, they can associate it with what they saw on a till point at some point, or what they saw on a billboard on the N1, and something they heard on the news. So there must be that. And sometimes, unfortunately, brands will give this piece of the pie to that person, this piece of the pie to that, and you just don't see that synergy in how all of these moving parts are speaking to each other. So when you work with the brand and with the expertise that I have, I am able to say, okay, let's wait. We are trying to discuss these glasses, but there are so many other things that we do as an organization. Why can't we sneak these in as an upsell? Okay, we want to do this over a video. Have we considered doing it over a podcast, for example?
Yeah.
The story is so big to share. So all of those sort of things are things that you sort of get to know along the way when you work with brands, and you're able to present it to them and cut yes. out, you know, the bureaucracy. And it's going to take time because it still needs to go to account director, from account director yes. to business unit manager and, you know, all of that sort of stuff before it actually gets to clients. And when it gets to clients, it's probably going to somebody junior in client, and the decision maker at client level does not necessarily get to hear the message you're trying to convey.
Yeah. So from my understanding, then in certain instances, it's better to work directly with the brand. But for some things, the agency is really great, like in terms of getting the messaging down, being clear on what the objectives are and all of these things.
And the deliverables.
But at times, the deliverables, but at times, the brand misses it even when talking to their agency or even when communicating with their agency by not giving them enough, call it collateral assets and some of the things that you may need as a content creator. I mean, you've spoken about a lot, from authenticity to understanding your audience to, I suppose, following your own beat in terms of creating content and not necessarily following all the hacks that experts or people who position themselves as experts would say in terms of content creation. Now, in closing, what should both, I suppose, well, there are three parts. The one part is the agency part. What should agencies consider or do before working with you? How should, say, a brand approach you? And what, where do content creators start when they want to build from 1,000 to 10,000 and 100,000 followers?
Well, that's such a loaded question. That is a loaded question. Oh, you're such a talker. This is going to, okay, so there are two questions. Yeah. I don't want to ramble. There are two questions here. One, the first question is, what do brands need to know when they want to approach you, agency or brand, when they want to approach you for a partnership? The second aspect is, what can I say to a budding content creator who wants to grow their audience as much as I've grown?
Yes, yes.
All right.
Exactly.
So let's tackle this first piece. Excuse me. So I think what I always stress to brands and agency is the fact that when you get Alfie, you get a different sort of content creator who has a bird's eye view of what's going on because of the exposure that he's experienced. So you are not just getting somebody who's going to just give you a video and move out of the way, you know. You're getting somebody who understands the drafting, the ideation of a concept, the drafting of a brief, and also the positioning of the messages to say, this is what we're trying to sell, this is where we're trying to go, and these are the platforms that we want to use, and this is how we want to tell the story. And therefore, we are going through PR, we are going through traditional media, we're going through digital. Are we doing a blog? Are we doing videos? Are we doing influencer marketing? What are we doing? So you've got that in Alfie. So it's so much easier to loop him into the conversation very early on so that you are able to also just get, I don't want to say exploit, but you get to experience all these other assets that he comes with. So it's not just the video aspect, but there are so many other things he's able to feed into when it comes to the brand and relaying the message. Happiness?
Yeah, absolutely. Got that.
The second piece of the pie is, this has been said, it's a buzzword and it's been said so many times. Authenticity, authenticity, authenticity. I kid you not, if you have more than two people listening to you around a braai or in a group of people, then you have the ability to grow your audience, because clearly there's more than one person that is able to listen to your message and they take a liking to it and they find it interesting, you know. So it's a matter of understanding and paying attention to those social cues. Pay attention to your audience. And as much as you're being authentic, as much as you're being funny or all of that sort of stuff, pay attention to the cues that you get from your audience. Your video numbers will show you. Check, is it because of what time I posted this video? What was I wearing when I posted this video? What was I saying? Is it because of the language I spoke? Like when I speak in English, my audience goes, oh yeah, you're not, yeah, you know, ooh.
yeah.
But when I speak to them in vernacular, you know, they're just like, okay. So I'll tease the fact that at the end of the day, he's still a professional, you know, in as much as you guys know him for this, I'll still weave those aspects in so it doesn't catch them by surprise. So it's understanding your audience and understanding the people who want to listen to you. If you pay attention to those people, I kid you not, they like inviting other people and saying, hey, I found him interesting. They will do the work for you. You don't need to do so. You just listen to the 10 that is listening to you. That 10 is powerful enough to go fetch a million without you doing anything different. You just focus on this 10 that keeps on listening to you. Once they've brought their friends, there's now 100 of them. You know, keep focusing on this 100. What is this 100 liking and what are they enjoying? They're going to fetch 1,000. Then it grows.
I know I said that was the closing question, but you brought up something that I'd like to follow through with a little bit. This idea that, you know, when the 100 like this thing, they'll bring you the 1,000 and the 10,000 and the million, right? And I like that concept. Now, I want to link that back to the authenticity, because sometimes some people, so you said your audience, for instance, your audience responds better to vernac than they do to English, as an example.
Sure.
So what if the 10 or the 100 respond better to the English and you start thinking that actually that's where things are going, but in actual fact, your audience respond better to vernac. You know what I'm saying? Like how do you merge what the audience likes with what's authentic to you? Because that's where the magic happens, I imagine.
Sure. So it's all a matter of listening to those social cues. Pay attention to the engagement. Pay attention to what people are saying. I mean, are people responding to your content in English when they comment onto your post, for example? Are people doing this? So right now, I understand that my audience is predominantly vernac. Doesn't mean that they don't understand any other language. We just converse better when I speak in vernac. But I've since discovered that there is a new market that I'm trying to penetrate that seems to like that small little English and a different form of content that I may put out. I still feed this group religiously, so, but I do not neglect this market. I still feed this market as well. I have a following of travelers that I don't know come from where, because I've posted content, traveling content. There's just a market of travelers. So in how I envisage my content and how I think of cues and all of that sort of stuff, I know that there's a huge vernac market, right?
Sure.
But there's this English market, but there's also this traveling market. You need to be able to know when to touch key points on all of these markets, because that's also how you grow. As you grow this market, it doesn't mean that this one must starve and must suffer. You need to now know how to balance yourself. And unfortunately, that takes practice. Some of us have a better handle on it than others. And people always say, you know, once a content creator gets to the millions, they suddenly become unapproachable. It's sort of you don't relate to them any longer.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of just knowing to listen and still taking time to read the comments. I unfortunately don't respond to the comments, but I read each and every one of them. Okay, this is how they interpreted this. This is how they interpreted this. Okay, sharp. Let's keep making sure that they are well fit. But how can we grow these ones? What can we say to these ones? Grow them. And sometimes, this is what I've found, sometimes you may not necessarily be able to grow that market effectively. You bring in someone they enjoy and collaborate. Because that's another thing content creators forget to do. Once you bring in somebody else and you collaborate with them, this market relates to that person so much better, but they like being here. And what do? That creator now comes with their market. So that's where you now see a lot of content creators that work side by side. If you pay attention to Primo 19, Robot Boy, those two content creators work side by side. Robot Boy is doing something with pop-ups, for example, because they both know that their markets and their audiences like each other, and even better, they like them together. So you then need to have that sort of insight and that strategy to be like, oh, okay, I brought in Primo and I saw what that did to my numbers, what that did to my following. How can we leverage more on that? I mean, the first video I posted with Robot Boy skyrocketed. It was so crazy because his market knows him for something else. Now, my market went to now go penetrate his market. His market came to mine, and it's magic, man.
Right. Elfie, thank you so much. So listen to your audience. Listen to your audience. Get those social cues. Keep creating for them. And most of all, be authentic. Thank you so much for making the time to join us.
Thank you so much for having me, Mongezi. I can tell that you are burning with more questions. I am a big friend of the lead creative. So whatever we did not finish this afternoon, we'll definitely make time to discuss at another point. Please feel free to summon me at any point. You have an incredible, incredible mind. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.